Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio. Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Hey everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Direct Message with A Creative DC. We are live on Full Service Radio, broadcasting from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan in Washington, D.C. You can listen in every week on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. and anytime at fullserviceradio.org. This weekly podcast is a dedicated dive into the A Creative DC hashtag feed. It's time spent with the people and projects who populate this city digitally and IRL. And I'm your host, Morgan West. I'm founder and director of the A Creative DC Project. You've seen us on IG and Twitter at A Creative DC. We have a nearly million strong hashtag feed on social across all the platforms. It's filled with events and visuals and art and design. But most importantly, the A Creative DC hashtag feed is filled with perspective on and of and in this city. So this is episode 10 of Direct Message on Full Service Radio. We're hitting double digits today with a great friend of the Creative DC Project. We have Mike Grady in studio with us. He works at the intersection of journalism and design as a freelance field editor. And I love that. I love that we're going to talk about his job today, because I am just all about jobs that like you didn't know existed, but are like dream jobs. And they're like it's the perfect job for him. I'm so excited to unpack that. So Mike is a freelance field editor. He is an amazing visual talent, and he's just someone who's good at a lot of different things. And I feel like in a creative career, it's always good to kind of hear, for me, like I love hearing how people got good at the myriad things that they're good at. So we're going to talk about his Swiss Army knife skill set, how he applies it to his job. We're going to talk about his career path, his creative outlets, the different cities he's lived and worked in. Mike, we have so much to get through today.
I know. I'm so excited.
Well, welcome.
Thanks
hey, for y'all. Being here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're so excited. So let's get right into this. Mike Grady, what does a field editor do? What does that mean?
I didn't even know this job existed.
That's good. You found it.
Yeah. I've been styling, I guess, professionally for about 12 years now. Started in fashion. Kind of happened into home and design. But basically what I do, I find stories to tell. So we're looking for homeowners with a great story and a beautiful home that we can photograph. And because I'm freelance, I don't work with any one publisher. Mm-hmm. But we tell their stories, we pitch to the editorial committee, and then they in turn pitch to their editor-in-chief, and then I either get an email or I don't, saying my project got picked up.
Well, that's so fascinating, because I'm going to say this as somebody who has kind of always like flirted around the edges of like PR, right? So you're like, you're doing your PR, your own PR. You know, I've been doing my own PR forever. Like I give so much credit to people who do PR full time, because it's really tough.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work to get a story told, right? And that ultimately is. So I think that's kind of what I want to make a little less nebulous here. So like, you're somebody who helps stories get told. You're
totally.
Someone who finds stories. Mm-hmm. And then brings them to the people who have the power to tell them.
Totally. So what I do is I work with the editorial team that's at the magazine that we're pitching to. We'll develop the story angle. We'll talk about, you know, like what we want to explore, how we want to, kind of what we're doing now. Like what you're asking me a lot of questions about my life and my path. And so that's what we do with the homeowner. And then if the story does get picked up, they'll hire me on as the producer and the stylist. And I'll work with a local photographer, wherever that story might be, whatever city it's in. And we tell that story, and it's fun. I love it. I'm a Southerner. I love storytelling and everything. I grew up sitting on the back porch during rainstorms, with the tin roof. If you can imagine, like two old rocking chairs with my grandmother, just listening to her telling these stories as the rain came down. And I have very vivid memories of that. And I really treated this as a part-time gig for a long time. I've worked a lot of other jobs, like you say, a Swiss Army knife skill set. And I always did this part-time. I was always freelancing, part-time doing this and trying to do like, you know, 4 or 5 shoots a year. And finally, I work a lot with Meredith, who produces Better Homes and Gardens. Finally, the style director there, she sat me down when we were working on a shoot. She's like, why aren't you doing this full-time? Mm. She's like, you have such a passion for people. You have such a passion for telling other people's stories. Why aren't you pitching to the magazine? Why aren't you telling people's stories? And now I have this great platform to do that for DC and the surrounding areas, which, you know, the listeners might not know this, but you do. I have a strong passion for the creative community here. It has pulled me back in twice-fold.
Twice-fold. I know. Wow. I love that. I mean, that's just such a, gosh, I feel like everybody kind of has those like, you know, at this Sherpa moments, like this person got me going in the right path. Mm-hmm. But really that kind of happens because you were on that path to begin with.
Yeah.
So let's back up down that path. So you say you started out in styling, this is going to sound crazy, but I think that's another kind of thing that's like a little nebulous, right? So like you hear the word styling and you're like, right, you bring clothes, totally. But like talk about what styling involves, because you have to like go out and find everything. And how did you get started? Let's talk about fashion styling first, and then we'll go into how you got into home stuff.
So it was crazy. I was living in New York after school. I took an internship with Levi's. I was doing something similar to what something you did in your past. I was designing store windows.
Yeah.
It was a crazy internship. It was still when it was legal to not pay your interns in New York. So I was working as a club promoter at night and doing windows during the day, and selling salon promotions on the street corner.
Such a New York story.
Totally. I was hustling Times Square, selling random ladies $60 salon promotions.
I love that.
Story for another day.
Yeah.
But
We've come so far.
I took that excitement that I got from living in New York when I moved back to Charleston, when I realized New York really wasn't my speed. There was a photographer that was working part-time in a restaurant and assisting on the side, David Sullivan. Everyone refers to him as Sully. He's amazing, so talented, such a force. And he saw something in me. He saw this opportunity for us to collaborate, and that's kind of all she wrote. We started writing photo stories together. We assembled this incredible team together and brought all these people in for this amazing story that we wrote together, shot it at his mountain cabin house up in North Carolina. And we ended up winning 2 Addie Awards for the video production that the video team that we brought in for that shoot did. And it sent me down my career path.
Yeah.
I fell in love with making the world pretty.
That is such an important thing though. I love that. It's funny because I think a lot of times I do this a lot in my own career too, is I like to say like, I know how to make things look good.
Yeah,
but that is actually like a very marketable skill.
It is. And I think it's something that people have shifted value on that topic. So now it's seen as social currency. Mm-hmm. But to me, it means so much more than that. It means improving those daily rituals that we have in our lives and making them more beautiful. So you're not just like rushing through life and coming home to a sad, ugly apartment with white walls. You know, like it's so important to make our lives a beautiful place so we can be the best version of ourselves that we can be. And something I've learned over my career is that's something that's attainable and accessible to everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status or social status. It's possible for you to make your life more beautiful. There's so many steps you can take to do things for you and not for, as much as I love Instagram.
It's not.
Yeah. It's okay to like share like, you know, those beautiful moments that you have at home. But at the end of the day, you know, making my environment, my body, a beautiful thing, and finding things that make it beautiful and objects and clothing, it's for me.
I love that. What a beautiful description of styling, honestly. So yeah, I mean, that is kind of what, so you're someone who bends visuals and bends environment.
I've always done that. You know, it it wasn't until I was older that I started thinking about my childhood. And I was talking to my mom one day and she's like, I remember when you used to lock yourself in the room and move all the furniture around. Aww. And you'd be so excited to show us all. And I was like, oh my God, I don't remember that.
You're like, I don't remember that, but that's what I did today.
But that's what I do every day. Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's a serious hustle. I think a lot of people imagine styling as this like cute career. Dating when I got to DC, I can't tell you how many dates I went on. People, I'd be like, oh, I'm a producer and a stylist. And they'd be like, oh, that's so cute. And I'd be like, it's not cute. It's a $1 billion industry, but thanks.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, that's, you bring up a really good point. So, I mean, I think, you know, and again, why I'm so excited to talk about what you do as a freelance field editor. It's not like I'm a lawyer. I'm an accountant. Mm-hmm. I am something that is like kind of very easily described. And it is also something where you have a little bit of like cachet is like, oh, there's like sparkly emojis around the word like freelance field editor. And it makes it kind of sound like, oh, yes, let's move this plant 2 feet to the right. But
which we definitely do.
Right. There's totally a lot of that involved. Yeah. But, you know, on the other side of that, it's like, and this is kind of something I'd love to circle back on. It's like, you know, when you talk about, you know, you're styling a home or you're creating a story. I mean, a lot of this is, I mean, styling's hard work, man. It's like running to 77 different stores.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
Like convincing people to let you borrow things. And then you have to carry the items and you have to like bring them to the shoot. And
it's a schlep. It's a lot of heavy lifting. You know, I definitely realized that I was 30 when I started getting residual back pain.
Oh, that's so real.
Yeah, it's super real. We do a lot of lifting, you know, fashion styling and home and decor styling. They're different worlds, but they're definitely both very much like hard work, you know, like mm-hmm. It's not some cutesy career where we're all dressing up, you know, super fashionable. Like I look, you know, I'm in like utilitarian clothes on shoot day. Totally. I'm like, I need to move. I need to sweat. I'm going to get, you know, gross. And it's all so we can make this beautiful image. And I think to kind of circle back on something a little bit too, about styling for me, it's not just about like making, you know, a space beautiful, telling stories of homeowners in the editorial way that we do. I'm really thinking about that homeowner's life. And it's like, how can we turn the volume up on this? Like, how can we take their style and incorporate new pieces or help put it together so it's beautiful for the image? Because that's so important. And that's, to me, that's the most exhausting part, is really like wrapping my head around that homeowner. And trying to tell their story the best way that I can, because you almost have to become them for a little while.
Wow. Yeah. So guys, if you're just joining us, we're here with Mike Grady. He's a freelance field editor with a background as a stylist in fashion and home. And now he works with publications to tell truthful stories about homeowners and people's homes and how people live. And this is, I mean, that in itself is just so fascinating to me. I know you do tons of other stuff and I want to make sure we talk about those things too. But I mean, you know, when you're talking about this type of work, when you're talking about telling these stories, you know, can you just kind of give us like an overview of like the process? So like, whose stories are you telling? Like,
sure.
Is there something recent maybe?
I'm working on a pitch right now. It's getting ready to go in front of our editor in chief at Better Homes and Gardens in a week or so. It's the owners of Leon's Bakery, which they have an outpost in Union Market. They also provide a massive amount of DC restaurants with fresh baked bread. It's an immigrant owned company, which I absolutely love. And I met them when I was working. So what brought me to DC was working at Billy Reed. Mm. I was doing custom suiting and working for Billy for 3 years.
That's right.
And they were clients of mine there. And while I was doing all this, I've always been freelancing, doing the home style stuff on the side. But I jumped at the opportunity to tell Elaine and Erardo's story. They're an amazing couple. They've built an incredible business. They've propped up a lot of other immigrant workers. And it really makes my heart sing to know that we might have an opportunity to tell their story. Now, we're hoping that the editor-in-chief likes it. All the editors of the magazine love it. So we'll see. But what happens is I'll find a home. I'll go take some scouting images. I'll do a little short interview with the homeowner, find out some details about the house, fill out a pitch form, submit it to my editorial team. They'll submit it during editorial committee review. So like all the editors get together with the exception of the editor in chief. and they'll talk about it. They'll talk about story angles. They'll see if it's, you know, does this work? Because they don't want to waste the editor-in-chief's time. And then they have like their big pitch meetings every 2 weeks, and I'll go in front of the editor-in-chief. And if the EIC says, I like it, they'll pick it up. They'll send me an email. We'll schedule a date. We'll work out all the details. Amazing. We'll book a photographer. It's exciting. Yeah. I really, 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 really love it. I love storytelling. I think it's so, I mean, it's a basic part of our humanity. You know, history and storytelling is something that everyone can relate to.
It is. And it also, it's what an interesting angle too, to just to be able to tell someone's story. Cause you know, we're talking about their business and, you know, the economic impact that they've had and, you know, how their immigrant experiences, they've been able to translate that to, you know, help others who are going through the same process in their home. Is what a fascinating inroad to that.
Totally. And it's a little bit invasive. It is. And there's like a delicate dance that you do with homeowners, because we bust up in their house for 4 to 5 days and like take over their space. And I'm always really respectful. It's something that I've learned working in this industry for a while. It's, you know, I try to make like little floral arrangements that I leave for the homeowner and like leave some little gifts and try and make it as effortless as them for them as possible. Because I know it's exhausting for them too, you know, to have us all in their space. But at the end of the day, like the product that we're able to create and the stories that we're able to tell, I mean, it really does bring me so much joy that I'm able to work in this industry. But it's totally like under the radar, you know, like it's not something that a lot of, I think a lot of people are surprised when I tell them this is what I do. I think people think I just like sit around my house and make pretty things all day. But it's a lot of work. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, the straight hustle where I'm my own business manager, PR manager, like billing manager.
Yes. Accounting.
Yeah.
You are your own accounting department.
Truth, truth. It's a lot of work, but I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
Well, thank you so much for kind of pulling the, what is the phrase? Pulling the veil, pulling the curtain back on that a little bit. Because it's so interesting. You know, you ultimately, I think if we kind of look at a magazine as like an entertainment device, right?
Sure.
You kind of like, it's one of those places where I'm less prone to question how something appeared in there. And so it's really fascinating to hear the inner workings of that.
You don't think about how many times I had to move that plant.
Yeah, no, I'm just not thinking about that. I love that.
Yeah.
So let's take a little detour, just for a couple minutes. And then I think it's a good time to go to break, but you've kind of talked about living in a bunch of different cities and you've come back to DC twice. And so let's just kind of, can we talk through that from like a career angle of where, and you know, where did you start out? Where were you born? Where was this beautiful rain tapping tin roof porch?
I was born in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm. So beautiful. I was very lucky. I'm from a small town outside of Charleston called Monk's Corner. Super small population. And I bounce back and forth between the two cities because like a true millennial, I am the product of my mother going through 3 divorces. So we moved around a lot, which, you know, I think it gave me that ability or that that skill set to be mutable, you know, to be okay with change. And I went to University of South Carolina. I actually studied to be an art teacher.
Aww.
I was early childhood education major, realized that I could not do it once we started going into the classroom. I have so much respect for teachers. The work that they have ahead of them is absolutely amazing. It's incredible that they're able to produce the youth that we're seeing right now. It really makes me excited. But you have to be able to shut that off and not take that stress home with you. And that's something I couldn't do. I'm way too emotional.
I love that. I mean, it's so important to know, like,
so I had
to build for something else.
Totally. I realized like this isn't what I was built for. And I wanted to go to art school, but it was too expensive. So I did the next best thing. I took an internship in New York, created my own path, made my own education.
Yeah.
I've worked in film and television. I was a costume buyer at Army Wives for a little while. I've done that.
I did not know that.
Totally. Worked for ABC Studios a few times. Emmy Holmes, who's an incredible costume designer, took me under her wing. She's amazing. Got to work with her. Developed a lot of admiration for that industry. But discovered wasn't for me. Yeah. that led me to segueing into working for Billy Reid. And I've also done some wholesale work with Troubadour Clothing. Lindsay Carter is the designer there. She's such a talent, such a talent. She took a hiatus to have kids for a while, and she's back now, and I'm so excited to see what she's creating. She was one of the first designers at Madewell. She was one of the first six when they were calling it Project M.
Wow.
She went to go work for J.Crew right out of FIT. So again, she was one of my professors. I learned so much from her, traveling with her, and she taught me a lot about, you know, managing your creative business and putting value on yourself as a creative individual. And then photo styling with Sully and doing all these amazing fashion short films and fashion stories. And a lot of people don't know this, but Charleston has a fashion week, and it was created by Ayoka Lucas. She is living in New York now. She's style director at a magazine there. And she created this thing that Fern Malice comes to, the creator of New York Fashion Week. And it has given, Southern creatives this platform to launch careers. Lindsay actually showed on that runway, and then she was later carried in Neiman Marcus. You know, it's amazing to see all these models that walked that runway that are Samuel Clayton, that I met there. He's an international model now, walking for Dior and Gucci and all these amazing brands and living his dream. And you know, Ayoka helped create that opportunity. So I was around all these amazing creative professionals during this renaissance that was happening in Charleston. And I saw the value that people were placing on that natural, that raw talent that people had. And I kept honing it and finding out like what my path was. And I think I'm finally starting to figure it out, but I still don't want to be pigeonholed. So I get that. People would be like, oh, I used to make these fascinators for a little while that I sold on Etsy. Cause you know, hustle.
Because of course. Yeah.
And I remember somebody giving a review on it, and they were like, I think Mike's found his like thing, his niche. And I was like, no. And I like instantly like took the wheel and turned it the other way. I was like, I don't want to be pigeonholed. I want to do something else.
That's incredible though, because I think of that as like, that's a survival mechanism.
Sure.
I love that. Yeah. Don't pigeonhole me, because you just never know where you're going to evolve. And it sounds like, you know, again, it's when you're in it, it always feels like, even when it's nice and calm and things are making sense, it is a little like waves crashing, and you know, you're kind of, there's just a lot of forces out there that a creative career needs to be able to be, what was the word you use? Mutable to, right? You really need to be able to like roll with change.
And you have to, you absolutely have to. I mean, most of us came out of school and couldn't find jobs. Yeah. I mean, we're the most overeducated generation that's ever existed in the United States. And you know, you saw all these creative industries just pop up out of that. And, you know, it's still taking shape. It's still taking form. And I think in order to be a successful part of that movement, you've really got to have a diversified skill set or you're going to drown. I mean, it's
just, I totally agree.
You know, there's a lot of forces out there. There's a lot of crashing waves.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I really think that too, you know, coupled with your like very diverse skill set, there's also, you know, when you talk about Charleston, when you talk about, you know, taking inspiration from the people who are around you, I think so much of what you do is tied into localism as well.
Absolutely.
So I think let's jump into that after the break. Guys, if you're just joining us, we're gonna put you on pause for a minute, but if you're just joining us, we've been chatting with freelance field editor Mike Grady. So we've gotten into what his job looks like. We've pulled back the curtain a little bit on how home stories get told. I love that, Mike. Thanks for sharing that with us. And we've talked about so much more stuff, and we have so many more things to talk about, including localism and DC and how you keep coming back here. So I'm excited about that. All right, we'll be right back, guys. This is a direct message with a creative DC.
Full Service Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Direct Message with the Creative DC. If you are just joining us, we've been talking with freelance field editor Mike Grady. He's my friend.
Hi.
He may be yours. Before the break, we really left things off by kind of honing in on, you know, Mike has a Swiss Army knife of a skill set. He's got, you know, he's good at a lot of different things. But really one of the things that's really informed his career prior to being in DC, and certainly while being in DC, is this kind of commitment to localism and openness to the community that's happening around him, and openness to kind of receiving inspiration and sharing inspiration. Yeah. So let's talk about that specifically. You know, what brought you to DC? And then, you know, what has your career looked like since you've been here?
I never in a million years thought that I would live in Washington, D.C. I had an outsider's perspective on politics. I grew up gay in the South. It was hard. It was tough. You know, like out of survival, you kind of keep to yourself. So when I had this opportunity with Billy Reid, they offered me a job in D.C. to come help open the store here. I was working for the shop in Charleston. And I took it. I was like, you know what? I'm all about a chance. Because prior to this, I had moved to New York City with never even having visited my entire life. I was like, you know what? Sure. I'll put all my stuff on a U-Haul and move to New York. Like, no big deal. I'll do it.
But I actually feel, I love that, because you're like, I grew up gay in the South. It's like, yes, get me the fuck to New York City.
I had to get the hell out of there. You know, like, I didn't have an appreciation for Charleston at the time. I was super young. I was 20 years old when I was moving to New York, and I was just like over it. I was so over it. I was over feeling like an outlier, an outsider. And I wanted to like embrace my gayness and my queerness and go on an adventure. So New York, then I came back to Charleston, and you know, we talked about this earlier, all the different jobs that I had there. And then Billy Reid gave me this opportunity, and I'll never forget the day that I got to DC, two suitcases in the back of a cab coming from Reagan Airport. It was April 20th, and we drove into the city, and there was these massive fields of tulips right over the George Washington Bridge.
Oh yeah.
We, you know, like I got to see all the monuments, and there was so much green everywhere. And I swear somebody must have called ahead and told them that I was coming. Because in this moment, we're at the top of the bridge and the wind gust blows and the windows in the taxi were down, and these cherry blossoms just danced across the Potomac. And I was like, girl, I was like, DC, you are beautiful.
You know, I love hearing that, because DC's biggest selling point is spring.
It's beautiful.
If you can just get somebody here in the spring, we've got you forever. We've tricked you. Your
totally,
hours.
Totally. That's exactly
so
what happened.
It worked.
They trapped me.
They
I got trapped.
You.
I got trapped by the pretty flowers. But it was beautiful, you know, like and then we pulled up to the store, and I'm standing in the middle of M Street. If you can imagine the chaos of Georgetown, y'all, it's crazy. The human traffic on the streets is wild. I showed up on a Saturday, two suitcases, a store that was under construction, lost little country boy in the middle of nowhere. But I lucked into this incredible crowd here. I really did. You know, I'll say if you're living in DC for the first time, it's going to take you about 2 years to find happiness and to find your groove, but don't give up on it. DC is a great city. The community here is amazing. You just got to find your people. And I walked into Redeem and I found my people, girl.
So Redeem on 14th Street, Lori Parkerson, also a dear friend of a Creative DC.
She's amazing.
Yeah. So she's had this beautiful independently owned boutique on 14th Street for 11 years now.
Yeah. And so we're coming up on 12 in October, which is amazing.
And you found yourself there.
I did. You know, one of the things we did when we were opening the store, Cammy, who I opened the shop with, also a DC local, grew up here. She was like, we got to go to all the local boutiques, tell them we're opening, you know, start building relationships with them, because that's important to the DC community. And that was my first introduction. We walked in the store, introduced ourselves. I met Emily Wall, who was working for Redeem at the time. I'm not going to get emotional, but she has ended up becoming my best friend.
Wow.
And it's all because of Redeem. You know, it was this, you know, community epicenter. And now we have The Line, which is becoming one of those epicenters as well. where I can't walk in this door without seeing somebody, you know, saying hello to me or just feeling a sense of community in this space. And Redeem immediately felt like that. I felt like I was at home when I walked in the door. Oh. And that's a great feeling to have. And subsequently, I've developed all of my creative professional relationships through there. I've collaborated with a lot of people that I've met in Redeem and forged some really long lasting relationships.
Oh, so wonderful.
When I left Billy Reid, I was in a pretty bad place creatively. Retail is a numbers game. And I was pretty stifled by that. It was really difficult, the relationship that I had with the business side mm-hmm. of the company. And I decided to hit the eject button for a little while. And my grandmother had passed away. She left me a little bit of money. And I had never been to New Orleans, but everyone told me it's this amazing city. You've got to go. It's so much like Charleston, but it's more raw. The creative talent there is incredible. Their queer community is amazing. You'll feel so at home there. And my old roommate was living there, my old roommate from Charleston. So I booked a trip. I went for 7 days that December after I left my job. Emily ended up coming to meet me. I extended my trip by 5 days, stayed longer.
It's so long.
And I fell in love, y'all.
It
only took 12 days. New Orleans is one of the most amazing cities I've ever been to in my life. They have such a strong... There's such a strong sense of community there. Mm. There's a lot of pain there too, and a lot of things that city's working through, but the beauty that exists around every corner, to the ferns growing on the side of buildings, to the jazz you hear playing in the park. Like, I mean, everywhere you go, you just feel like you're inside of a creative person's brain. Wow. It's just gorgeous. So I went back for Mardi Gras. I was like, okay, I'm booking another trip. I gotta make sure that this is where I want to be. So I went back for Coup de Vue, which is the, ironically, it's the political satire parade that kicks off Mardi Gras. So for those of you who don't know, there's parades every weekend leading up to Mardi Gras. I mean, the city is just like, it's just a party for a month. But like costume making and incredible creativity, and it was just amazing. And I got pulled into the parade on that trip. I marched in the parade. I was dressed as gay Jesus.
Naturally.
I was kissing babies and loving on people, and it was amazing. I felt at home there. So I met some other creatives there that were looking to explore woodworking and lighting, and Chad Roban became one of my best friends. I met him in a pizza place while I was visiting, and came back, stayed with him on that second visit for Coup de Vue, met a ton of people, and 2 weeks later I had sold all my shit and I was moving in a U-Haul down to New Orleans.
Again, naturally.
Naturally, yeah.
As one does.
Found this amazing house. I mean, it was an incredible experience. Lived with some other artists. Spent 8 months there. It was never meant to be a permanent thing. I was only supposed to be there for 6 months and ended up staying for almost 8. And then I came back to DC because DC.
Yeah, I love that. So guys, if you're just joining us, we've been having just a delightful conversation with Mike Grady. He's a freelance field editor. And really, no matter where he lives, because he's lived in a bunch of different cities from Charleston to New York to DC and New Orleans, no matter where he lives, community really informs his career. And it kind of informs his decisions about his career and where his career is going to be taking place as well. So, you're making me want to kind of move to New Orleans, but I do think it is testament to this city that you came back.
So
talk about, what was that decision like to come back to DC and kind of, you came back and, I mean, from where I'm standing, you hit the damn ground running on career stuff.
I did. And I think that hiatus that I took in New Orleans, again, like, it was so important for me to integrate myself into all the communities that I lived in and build lasting relationships with the other creative professionals in those cities. And I've maintained those relationships. But when I was coming back to DC, I felt this longing. Like, I missed DC like it was home. And I had never felt that way. Charleston had always felt like home to me. And I had never felt like a place was home until I was living in New Orleans, this amazing, beautiful, inspiring place that still holds, a special place in my heart. I didn't expect to feel the way that I did when I got there, but I missed it. And actually, the week that I came back to visit, I was helping our very dear friend Gert, with her business, Mutiny DC, moving it to upstate New York. I popped into an A Creative DC event at Makedo.
Yeah.
And you asked me to talk about my experience, and it was this raw moment where the wound was super fresh because it was really hard to leave New Orleans and come back to DC, but I knew it was the right thing to do. I knew it was the place I needed to be for my career to really take off. I got to share this story, and I got a little emotional talking about it, but you know, we shared that hotel room in Richmond when we were traveling and doing stuff for Mutiny together. And you told me about A Creative DC before you were getting ready to launch it. And then a couple months later was when I was, you know, at that event, and to see where it had come from, all the work you had put in and what you wanted to do with it, to just create a community platform where creative professionals could feel connected in the city. Girl, it has given all of us an opportunity in this city to be taken more seriously, to feel more included, to feel more loved by the city we live in. And it was in that moment when we were at Makedo, it all came crashing down on me. And I was like, I came back to this city because of A Creative DC, like because of what's going on in the city and how everyone's collaborating and all of these people are working together and propping each other up. Like, it's amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, thank you. You've been so amazing, and you're just amazing. But you are very much like, you know, it's just this project exists because of the community that like already exists for it.
Totally.
Here. And it's so interesting because, you know, when you talk about, you know, I feel like New Orleans does get a lot of credit for their creative community, and Charleston absolutely has been celebrated for, you know, you know, all sorts of different, you know, creative contributions, whether culinary or, you know, even they even have like a legit fashion week, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, totally.
And
totally.
Then New York, of course, is New York, but it is so interesting to, you know, and I love this. I love this about people who make their shit happen in DC. It's like, is a little bit harder than it is in another city where you can just kind of be taken seriously, whether on a local or on a national level.
Yeah.
That like you're doing something that is real.
No, it's true. And we have a lot of trouble as creative professionals placing value on ourselves. I think it's probably next to billing clients is the hardest thing you'll do as a freelance creative professional. It's very difficult to place value on yourself. And I was in such a low place before I went to New Orleans, you know, like dating sucked. I like was just having a really hard go at it with relationships. I was really lost on what I was going to do career wise. And New Orleans helped me find myself.
It's amazing.
It was like the best gay art camp I could have ever gone to.
That needs to be on all of the tourism posters.
But it really, it does. And actually, they have this incredible campaign right now that's Gay New Orleans. And these boys that I absolutely love, if you don't know them, you got to look them up. Bo and Matt, they have this blog called Probably This, and they did this whole campaign for the Visitors Bureau in New Orleans.
Wow.
That's queer, gay New Orleans, how to visit New Orleans if you're a gay person. And I love that. It meant, you know, like that community meant so much to me when I got there, and I met all these boys that were amazing and that like looked like they were straight out of a Tom of Finland cartoon, but we're like out in the street, like wearing glitter and high heel boots and dresses. And like, there was such an opportunity there for me to explore myself as a gay person that I hadn't had in other cities. Cause I felt like I had to hide it or tone it down, or like to be accepted, to be able to find love, to be able to go on dates. And girl, it gave me my confidence. I came back from New Orleans and like, I was ready to hit the ground running. I was like, I'm ready to make a career. I don't give a shit what you think of me. Yeah. I don't give a shit if you don't like what I'm wearing, or if you want to point fingers, or if you want to talk about me, like, good. I'm glad you're talking about me. Like, I want to build something for myself. And we are our own worst enemies sometimes as creatives. Like, we're so hard on ourselves. We don't think we're worth it. We don't think our point of view is worth something. And we were talking about this before we went on, you know, like after 30, you realize like, I've really got to start loving myself more.
Yeah.
I've really got to start believing in myself, because you can really get in your own way. You get in your own way all the time as an individual, whether you're creative or not. Like, it is a hard obstacle to overcome.
It is. And thank you for talking about that. It is. It's just, it's, you know, we work in an arena where like, you don't want to be constantly reinforcing like every tiny thing, but it's like, no. You really do need to kind of pause and be like, no, this is great. I'm good at what I do.
Yeah. Self-appreciation is important. It you know, is. Like you gotta ride that line between yeah. like, being full of yourself and learning how to like appreciate yourself. But
well,
it's DC has been the creative community has been very encouraging for me. I've made a lot of friends. I've made, you know, we were talking about this earlier, collaborated on a lot of projects. I know you have too. We've had opportunities to collaborate on fun stuff together, and it's a family, and it's ever growing, and it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, right under this roof, you know, like Spike Girde was a friend that I made years ago, and I put together this when I was working at Billy Reid. I put together this little pop-up brunch with him and Jeremiah Langhorn, who is the executive chef at the Dabney. And at the time, he was working on the Dabney. And we were like, I was talking to Jeremiah at Mutiny one day. I was like, we've got to put together like a pop-up brunch at Charleston Wine and Food with you and Spike. And I went to work. I like, you know, like found a venue and got in touch with one of my friends, Brooks, who has Jack Rudy Tonic. Mm. Company, and now he owns three restaurants. And we put together this little brunch, and like all the editors from all the magazines skipped their events and came to our brunch. It was totally sold out. It was so much fun. I had such a good time. And now like Spike, I live across the street from the line. Don't stalk me, but do, because like that'll make me feel really important. But like, you know, like Spike lives across, I mean, he lives across the street now. His restaurant's across the street. And you know, like it's crossing over, you know, like, I had an opportunity that day we went to go eat at his restaurant in Baltimore. You know, like it's amazing to me to the value that never gets cashed in on. Yes. You know, there's a lot of connecting that people like us do that we don't get a financial return on, but it doesn't matter to me because at the end of the day, it's all about connecting people so they can be better. Yeah. They can tell their story.
Connecting and
just
being in and of the community.
Totally.
Well, you know, totally. I'm grateful to New Orleans for what they gave you because I really think that you,
me too, girl.
You are certainly in the right place here in Washington, D.C.
I feel it. I definitely
feel it. In
Adams
Morgan.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm so glad. So our time is coming to a close, but gosh, this has just been so nice to catch up with you.
Yeah, totally.
And really to hear just about, I don't know, the path towards becoming a freelance field editor. I mean, I really think that a lot of what you shared today is just like good advice for being a human on the planet.
Thanks.
But, you know, truly, I mean, I think my biggest takeaway from today is just, you know, we are living in the evolution.
Yeah.
You know, and just
totally
kind of in, you know, having it be centered in a place of community and localism is just
like really, love your neighbor. That's so important. Go knock on a door, bake some cookies, do something for someone next door. Like
Mike,
you know?
Grady leaving us with sage ass advice. I love it so much. So, Mike, can you please just share, how can we kind of keep up with what you're doing? So I know you're on Instagram.
I am on Instagram. My website's currently under construction, but you can find me at mike.grady on Instagram. I've taken a little hiatus lately because I'm working on a project that we can't talk about yet, but you can definitely keep up with me there. And keep your eye on heymikegrady.com. That's heymikegrady.com. for updates on some new projects, and you'll be able to see some of my work up there very soon.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
For sharing your you.
Yeah.
And giving
thank
us
you.
All this advice. So guys, that's it. Big thanks again to our guest, Mike Grady, for joining us this week. You can expect Direct Message every single week. We'll be back next Wednesday live at 1 p.m. You can listen in on fullserviceradio.org, or you can catch us anytime there at directmessage.fullserviceradio.org. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at A Creative DC, and online at acreativedc.com. This project would not exist without perspective outside of our own. And we are so grateful to partner with our dear, dear buddies at Full Service Radio to be able to take these weekly dives into the A Creative DC hashtag feed. You can follow along with our full service friends at fullserviceradio.org, at Full Service Radio on Instagram, and at Full Service RDO on Twitter. Until next week, I'm Morgan West, and this has been Direct Message with A Creative DC. Later, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.